It's easy to get lost. This is The Revenue Maze, and I'm Valerie Cobb. Join me as we navigate the halls, dead ends, and U-turns on your path towards upward growth trajectory. The Revenue Maze is sponsored by Revenue North Star, guidance and execution through fractional revenue leadership, uncovering hidden revenues, and empowering small business growth through process-driven sales customized to your company environment. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another great episode of The Revenue Maze. I have an amazing guest for this episode. She's a colleague and friend, and I am really, really excited to have her on the show. She is actually somebody that I look up to, and she actually has taken on the challenges from her children that has said, hey, can you swim 2.5 miles in freezing cold water and beat the odds? And very athletic, a lot of fun to be around, but not only that, just an amazing leader. And we're going to tell some stories about that. And right now, currently, she is the president and CEO of Elite Solutions. Welcome, Monica Rozier.
Thank you so much, Valerie, for having me today. I'm so excited to be here. What a great introduction. Makes me all blush. But thank you.
Well, sometimes I wash my mouth and I can do something with it. Some days I
But thank you. That was a nice intro.
Oh, good. You know, and it is. And they want to learn more about you because you have done such amazing things in business and as a leader. But what we always start with is always, what is one thing that you can tell the listeners and viewers that can help them get out of the revenue maze?
Oh, okay. That's a good one. You know, I'll have to go back to when I was at Sprint. My leader at the time was Tiffany Miner, and she taught us something that I've taken with me from that point all the way through my career, because I just felt it really is that one thing that gets us out of the revenue maze. And it's this concept of the first team. And what it ultimately meant is our first team is the people, like our peer group. And we're loyal to that team first. We have to be aligned and work together with that team. And then we have a team of people who report to us. So we're still loyal to them. We still work with them. But our first team is the most important team. And that has stayed with me throughout my entire career.
Well, and that's an amazing concept of alignment and prioritizing and everything. And so I am just curious, give us a few pointers of how first team has helped in, basically, you've been, like you said, at Sprint, how that's helped move forward for the revenue line. What has that accomplished for everybody?
So I can give probably my very best example of introducing this that had the biggest impact was when I was in the beverage industry. When I went into Hayden Beverage, the team was very dysfunctional. They were great in their individual silos. They were very good. But the leadership team did not work together. They did not have a common goal. And the customers paid the price. The employees paid the price. Revenue paid the price. Mm-hmm. Everything just was, you can't have an operation in silos. It just doesn't work. So I introduced this concept to them.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you just can't. And, you know, they felt like they were all good friends. They could sit and talk about sports or whatever, you know, they did that weekend. So they all thought they were great friends, but they refused to work together and they refused to be loyal to each other first. And so I introduced this topic to them, and I did it from the very first day I started, because I saw within minutes how dysfunctional they were with each other. And with that, we set common goals. So the team worked together to come up with the goal. How do we want to get there? And we held each other, or I watched them hold each other accountable. I even took it so far, if there was a problem out in the field with a customer, whether it was a operations problem or a sales problem, didn't matter. Both the sales manager and the ops manager went and talked to that customer together. So they showed a united front. They did a united front to their employees as well. Didn't mean they always agreed or they, you know, but they had to come to an understanding and find a solution together. And I just made it a non-negotiable.
That's, you know, that's very interesting. So for those that do know Monica, she's the kind of human person that will come in and bring everybody lunch and treats. And she's quite the cheerleader with some of this stuff. And I love that when you're talking about the difference between being friends and having unity, mm-hmm. because that there, those are key elements that I think are worth definitions, right? Right. When you're talking about, you know, hey, we talk, shoot the breeze and all of that kind of stuff, we could be all scattered shooting the breeze, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. We can say this is our favorite team, but it doesn't mean we're collectively on a united front servicing a customer, right?
Right.
And I really like that. How are some of the ways that you were able to get some of them to see that? Because sometimes they think that, hey, I basically, we both go home and we watch a football game together, or we go to a bar later or something like that. So we're all friends. And then they come into work as if it's some kind of, this is my wall, this is your wall. How did you get around some of that with this concept? Because you said it was non-negotiable, but
right.
you know, you're always going to have some yeah, that.
You are going to have pushback. But I set the line from day one. It's really a non-negotiable kind of culture that we will create. And it wasn't easy. It doesn't mean day one, everyone went, yep, best idea ever. This is what we're going to do. So yes, it took time. And it took them going in their silos and me challenging them. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You need to go talk to Ryan and you need to work that out. Come back to me and tell me what's going on. You know, so it was this, it was a constant asking them to go to each other and solve problems. Cause they did a lot of, you know, I'm going to go tell mom kind of mm-hmm. feeling what, you know, what the other department's doing. I'm like, wow, you have a valid point. Have you talked to them? No. Well, are we getting to the goal that we set as a team? No. Okay. Well, what are you going to do about it then? And yeah. so it was that constant challenge back to them and what they were doing. And ultimately it really did drive revenue because our customers were happier. They allowed us to do a lot more because they saw we were able to deliver on what we said we were going to be able to do. Not just what Joe said he could do and then sell the salesperson down the river or vice versa. It was what we were able to do as a company.
Yeah.
And that was huge.
Well, because customers can smell the division.
Yes.
Just as much.
Yes.
And we know in today's buying environment, the reality is the biggest competitor is no decision right now, right?
Yep.
And then any other point that would divide or have them feel uneasy, when I say them, customers, feel uneasy about your company or whatever, mm-hmm. You end up even fueling more no decision, right? Or sending them to an actual physical competitor, your competitor, because it's like, hey, I don't want to work with that. And it's really odd that concept is slow to have adoption, right? The cutting down of the silos. We talk about that in the CRO role,
yes.
you know, originally more of a software kind of SaaS mm-hmm. situation, term, right? But in all reality, all revenue is revenue, anything right. that impacts revenue. And if we look at it and we say, we're all going to study heavily the customer buying journey and know exactly how they buy, when they buy, when their need is, and how to service them. If you have information in service or success,
mm-hmm. right,
and then you have information at an AE level, and then you have information at another, you know, in marketing, and they're all kind of doing this sort of sort of situation, then we, then it's obviously going to impact revenue. So I'm always curious why the battle lines are drawn between those departments.
I think people are protective of themselves and their team. And I get that. I'm very protective of the people who work for me. And for me, it was changing. I needed to be just as protective to my peer group and the goal of the company. That's my role as a leader. And it's my role today, you know, working with the clients that we, you know, we work with Revenue North Star. Same thing. I'm just as loyal to, we have to get all these pieces to work together or we will not hit the goal.
So let's talk about goal a little bit, because you've talked about the concept of first team. And a team would indicate that there's some kind of goal. And you kind of, if I remember right in this dialogue, because we've had a few dialogues in our lives, if I remember right, you kind of had this concept of saying, well, the team, you're loyal to that team, but also creation of goals so that everybody supports the goals. Did I miss that, or am I?
Oh, that is 100%. Okay. I mean, yes, we all have revenue goals and we have a P&L and those types of things that sometimes we have a lot of say and sometimes we don't, but it's the how we get there. It's the KPIs we set, the measurements, the small goals that we have to hit. Those are the things that they would work on together. And we actually got to a point where we did even our budgets all together and everyone got to see how the other person was coming up with their portion of it. And talk through it.
Yeah.
And then decide as a team, even say from even an expense standpoint or a new product or a new route we wanted to build that would drive more sales. What's the impact on the whole business? And that whole team would talk about that. So they came up with it. And then there's buy-in, right? They were part of the process. It doesn't always mean that they were excited about every piece, but they were part of it and they had a say, and then they accepted in the end, this is the way we're going to do it.
That's the unity piece, right? Doesn't mean you always have to agree.
Right.
But once you've created the rule of the engagement, that means that you follow the rule of engagement from that point forward, right?
Exactly.
So you can agree to disagree kind of, but
right.
But, and at the end, what happens? So I know in my environment, sometimes some of those that you're your first team, right?
Right.
And everybody has visibility. So they know the commonalities and all of that. It makes it so much easier because they're just like, well, that's the goal.
Right.
How are we going to get there? I don't have a magic wand to say that I'm going to fix it magically without you, but at times they will come back sometimes and say, well, I'm the one that I didn't vote that direction. We shouldn't have done that. Right. So how have you dealt with that?
I think for me, I'd be like, yeah, we heard you and we decided a different way. Doesn't mean we can't change it now. I mean, when you talk about strategy, things can be changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of, so that way they're not put down by what they had to say because it was valuable at the time. Maybe they were right. Okay, great. Let's pivot. And let's try something else.
Yeah. So I will often quote different books, but there is Jack Stack's Great Game of Business. And one of the things that I amazing operating system, basically, you know, but one thing that I really, really loved was the transparency of the goal. Was fabulous way to get the transparency of the goal. And it took a lot of heat off of leadership, really, because everybody was involved at some level at the creation of the goal. And of course, the scorecards are a lot of different types of scorecards. But in this situation, it was mostly the financial statements, you know, and having those sales huddles. One thing I didn't agree with was that you can't change the game in the middle of the year or in the middle of the time. And there's times where it's like everybody forecasted and at the end of the day, some kind of major, well, think of COVID, something major happened that was a defining event, and it blew the forecast, because a forecast is not real. It's like you're saying you have a crystal ball.
Right.
And one of the challenges with that was that it felt a bit demoralizing. They're like, but we're not going to win the game. Right. And it's like, you're right. And in football, you wouldn't have won the game, even if something like that happened. But at the other, you've got to balance motivation. And you're like, we can always change the strategy. Mm-hmm. So when you say we can always change the strategy, what one other thing that I really liked is they always said, if you plan for a recession, there isn't one. So they always had contingency planning to then say, well, we can't change the scorecard, but what we can change is the contingency. But how in the middle of that have you been able to still motivate teams when you're like, when they feel like they're demoralized, they feel like this didn't work, our plan did not work. Right. So now we're going to change the strategy to make it work. Mm-hmm. How do you keep them motivated? That's my question.
I think for me, it's so interesting you say that. Plan B is something that I've always had. I actually have plan A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And we would have that in the, just like you said, in the very beginning, here's plan A.
Yeah.
Plan A doesn't work. Here's plan B and here's plan C.
Yep.
So if we had to pivot, it would just be like, okay, we're moving to plan B. We know what that looks like. You know, here's the reminder. Sense. Let's go. And I think that's what made the difference. If you're coming up with plan B in the middle of a disaster, yeah, it's going to be emotional and very difficult to get across the finish line, because there's not going to be that time for buy-in. But if you get buy-in to plan A, B, and C ahead of time, so much better and easier if you have to pivot.
Yeah. One of the companies they got everybody together and said, okay, so now what are we going to do in this situation? So that was very, very useful in it. But I was just curious with your first team, you know, how you've kept them going and made sure that stays on target, because in all reality, that is, it has to stay on some sort of target.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you miss forecast, you've got to figure out how to either cut jobs or get it back. So it's not like it.
What does that bottom line look like? I mean, that's,
yeah.
Then at that point, your bottom line management too.
Yeah. What do you have to do? That is very, very true. Well, Monica, there are so many amazing stories. You talked about Sprint. I think you have been with like Four Seasons, if I remember right. You've been with in the hospitality. You talked about Hayden Beverage. And I'm trying to remember what else.
I've been with Hagedorn Marine.
Hagedorn, So you've been in a lot of industries.
Yeah, I've been in four different industries. So hospitality, wireless telecom, beverage industry, and retail boat sales and service.
So how were you able to do it? Because a lot of times there's the, oh, we got to hire within our industry. They got to have their book of business. They've got to get all in. And we know book of business rarely follows anybody, but you know, they still think they have to have book of business. And right now you're currently even in a light pharma. Right. So this would be like your fifth, and I think you were in automotive. And,
yeah,
you
know. I was.
So how have you been able to transition to so many different industries and still follow the same methodology?
You know, I think ultimately business is business at the top level. They have a P&L. They need revenue. they need, you know, most businesses need people to, you know, to drive that revenue. So that part stays the same. What has really changed is just the product for me over time, whether it's the product of service and the hospitality and, you know, rooms and food and beverage and those types of things to, you know, cell phones. But it was all about, you know, managing people, managing processes, coming up with new processes if they didn't work, new people if it wasn't working. I mean, it's really managing those things. And so it's the same. You learn new lingo. You learn new acronym, lots of new acronyms always. So, I mean, there's always lots of learning as you transition from position to position, but the fundamentals are the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals tend to be the same.
Yep.
And I love that you said people, process, fix process, fix people, people, process.
Those are the two big pieces.
Two big pieces that equal the third P, performance.
Performance. Yep. Yep. And how you end up doing.
Yeah. What you end up doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That is so very, very interesting. So a little birdie, and I kind of mentioned it in the intro, that you're pretty dang competitive, not like rudely competitive, but you're very competitive, almost with yourself, I would say, almost more. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about, you know, I mentioned swimming in a freezing cold lake. I wouldn't do it. You know me, I'm a scuba diver and I want 90 degree water, right?
yeah. So I have, my family is highly athletic. I'll just give them that. I'm not highly athletic, but I'm a great cheerleader and I'm willing to try anything. And so my family was all doing this swim. They had done it many times. It was a 2.4-mile swim across the lake. And one November I said, you know, hey, next year when we do that race, I'm going to do it. And my kids,
but this is not just a lake. Where is this lake?
It's in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So
it is very cold.
It is a cold lake. I did wear a wetsuit. So it is a cold lake and it's cold to train in because you are training definitely in the spring when it's very cold.
Yeah.
And my children actually, you know, said, Mom, you can't do this. Only Dad can do things like that. And, you know, that was the real challenge to me. I'm like, well, no, I can do it too. admittedly, I did go to my daughter's private coach, swim coach, and said, can I really do this? Can you teach me how?
Say yes and figure it out.
Please say yes and we figure it out. And he's like, yes, we'll figure it out. And, you know, join masters. And I did, I finished last of my family, but not last in the race.
Yay.
I knew I wasn't out to win. I was out to finish to prove I could do it. So that's the competitive. It doesn't mean I don't want to win, because I definitely do. I'd say probably more in the work world. You know, I like to win more, but you know, athletically, I like to feel good about that journey and finishing it.
You yes.
But because you. I know I don't have all those, that raw athletic talent that I just watch my family go and do something off the cuff. I'm like, how'd you figure that out in 10 minutes?
I love that, because it shows a pattern for who you are, because you also just recently dropped a kid off at a new job and went out partying till 2 a.m. with them. And I,
oh my gosh, haven't stayed up till 2 a.m. I can't even tell you the last time, but he was like, I'm going to go out some more. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm coming too.
And I was thinking of that one alongside just roll up your sleeves and get crap done, right?
Yeah.
Because with you, you know, one of the things that's so hugely important with, especially the difference between fractional chief revenue officers, full-time equivalent, part-time, or interim, they can all be terms that are being used. But one of the key things is a lot of times people think part-time or outsource is only a drop in maybe some hours or some time, or maybe they're consultants. And we always say the fine line between a consultant is the fact that it's execution as well as consulting, right? So any full-time equivalent would consult on what they're doing with their first team, as you called it, right? And then they would literally get in and get crap done, and it boils down to the accountability piece. And I find that you are extremely self-accountable. Like, you hold yourself to the highest level of accountability, whether the CEO does or not.
Well, I think from a leadership standpoint, and even from what I'm doing now, if something's not working, I start with me. Did I not communicate it clearly? What could I have done differently? How can I get this done? And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's always learning along the way. But I do start with me. And what do I need to do? And, you know, sometimes it isn't me who was at fault, but I do have to, I start with the vetting there.
Yeah. Well, and taking stock, I mean, yeah. that's the point of not deflecting, but it is definitely the accountability side of the fence. It's not just going into a company and telling them what needs done, but actually what needs done and setting up teams to get it done and right. setting and overseeing what that is. And mm-hmm. then, you know, I think you said you were general manager at Hagedorn.
I was right? a general manager at Hagedorn and a general manager at Hayden Beverage.
Yeah.
When it was in the wireless, I was a district sales manager.
Mm, yeah.
And then in hospitality, I kind of did everything.
Every role.
Feels like every role. So yeah. But, you know, what's been fun about my career is I've had the opportunity to be in family-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. My parents own their own business. So I grew up in my family's business and been, you know, had the opportunity to work for a Fortune 50 business, you mm-hmm. know, when I was with Sprint and with T-Mobile. And then, you know, back to family-owned. You know, both with Hayden Beverage and Hagedorn Marine. And I'd say probably of my favorite of all was really the beverage industry and really loved Hayden Beverage, Dodds Hayden, who's the CEO and owner. Just such an inspirational leader.
Yeah.
And visionary. And yep. I just and had such passion for the people who worked for him as well as the success of the business. And I think made so many people loyal to him and to the business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember that because you've talked about that being one of your favorite jobs. So mm-hmm. if you were to tell the listeners, how did you get here? How did you get here today? Why are you with Elite? Why did you go out on your own? What prompted you to get to this point in your career?
You know, that's a great question. I think, you know, when I was at Hagedorn Marine, I enjoyed it. And I just felt like I wanted to do more and I wanted to touch more businesses. And so I started talking to people like you because I was in a Vistage group and really kind of started visiting what would this look like and how can I take all the skills that I've learned over these years in these four different industries and help small to medium sized businesses improve their business, improve their revenue, maybe start a new business for them. What does that look like? How do we get them there? And that just seemed to really fit in with my passion and where I had like that made me feel whole. I could go out and I could try to make a difference and make mm-hmm. things better for them.
Yeah.
And so far that's been the piece I've loved the most.
Yeah. I think we get to that point where it's like, let's make a difference. And it's just a different stage in career. Sometimes when you're first learning or sort of that evolution. And then of course, with the skilled labor shortages and all sorts of things happening in the globe, it seems like a smart way to go, even if it's an interim position versus, you know, the fractional piece of it. It's one of those things that,
And I was attracted to fractional. You introduced me to the concept of fractional because I think all I'd ever heard in the past was consultant. And through my career, I've seen consultants come in, do exactly. And I just come in, they, you know, present ideas, they analyze the business and then they leave. And, you know, I've watched owners take it or leave it. And I really wanted to be more than that. Like to me, that didn't make a difference enough for me. I wanted to be able to come in and work together with them on solutions or ideas on how to do it, but then see it through, get it actually done. Because that's where you see it makes a difference.
Well, because real change doesn't happen unless there is that. You know, I mean, if real change did happen from complete, don't get me wrong, I love consultants and I have some myself and I have coaches.
Yeah.
Everybody has that, right? Mm-hmm. But until you actually make it a habit, you won't change.
Right.
And the challenge that you, and it's very evident. I love the book by Daniel Pink, To Sell as Human. Mm-hmm. He probably thinks I'm an internet stalker because I always loop him in on LinkedIn or something, you know, but he never responds. But I really like it, his book, because he talks in that book about the healthcare community and how you could go into a doctor and they could tell you to quit smoking or lose weight, or they can tell you all those things. They're consulting you on real change, on what you need to change. Right. The challenge is they're not there day in, day out to make the execution of it. So very few people quit smoking. Very few people either gain or lose the weight or change their diet or whatever they were asking them to do, because there's not enough accountability happening with it. And that's just kind of change management 101. And yet I hear all the time people going, oh yeah, my consultant came in, and it was like, well, how did that go? Well, they gave us great ideas. Okay. So who's executing on the great ideas? Right. And some of the best consultants I've had have always charged and said, who's going to execute on this?
Right.
Who's going to challenge it. So that fractional space does kind of blend the two.
Right.
It's all this experience for years on end in something to ramp very, very quickly. But then after that, it's all this sort of, okay, it's an execution of all that experience quickly, rapidly. It doesn't mean it's not going to take time. We know that, but then it is the catalyst for change, right? It means you're going to change. Mm-hmm. And if you don't change, it means you were not really working through it, right?
They weren't ready at the time.
They weren't ready.
They just weren't ready. And sometimes they're not. And, you know, that's another opportunity. True. And yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, we've had tons of great consultants. And for me, I wanted that blend. I wanted to see it through. That's just who I am. I want to see the end result.
Yeah. And I love that. Well, it's been amazing. I mean, you're just, I always call this out, but what was your last book you read?
Last book I read was Conversations Made Easy by Chris Jennings. I'm currently reading Language in the Pursuit of Leadership Excellence. And that one is just hitting at home communication. It's just, you know, really all about communication and having difficult conversations. So it can apply to home life, can apply to work life, could apply for me to a client, you know, whatever it might be. So I find that it's really intriguing so far. I'd say if I had to say what I really read last, it's going to be some mystery thriller, because that's
my true addiction.
James Patterson, kind of my true addiction. But
Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan fan. Lots of great books. But anyways, that's my true addiction. But I do try to, I'm always trying to work on developing myself too.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Monica, how can people get a hold of you?
I think the very best way to get a hold of me is through LinkedIn.
Okay.
I do have an unusual last name, I know. It's R-O-Z-I-E-R. Better than my maiden name. That was not a good name, but my married name is much better.
Well, except for, and we always talk about this. Now, Monica in the tech space has the best initials on the planet.
I do.
And I think that if GoDaddy and the rest of them could sell the domain, they would. But what's your initials, Monica?
It's MRR. So everyone loves in revenue, MRR. So so MRR at revenuenorthstar.com. MRR. I've had quite a few clients go, we love that.
I know, right? It's like, can we have it? Can we have it? No, that's actually my initials.
Yes, they can't have it.
All right. Well, thank you to all the listeners. And it has been another great episode. I really love learning from the guests. And Monica, you have been amazing. And for those who are listening, please share it, like it, give Monica some love. We all want that, right?
Yep.
And just let us know how we're doing with it. So thank you again for being listening and viewing. And thank you again, Monica, for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you all for joining another great episode. Hats off to all you small businesses out there. I can't wait for the next episode.